bosses or who?
I'm talking particularly of the union bosses, yes. These people are hired and they work 52 weeks a year at the highest scale that the union can. I see very little that they do for their people.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions for the witness? Next, we'd like to hear from, I'm not sure I have the pronunciation correctly, Mr. Carl Nalinka.
It's Carl Nalinka. Died at 1526 Gateway Drive in Fairbanks, Alaska. I've lived in Alaska for 18 years plus so far. And although I don't believe House Bill 209 is perfect, it's a better bill than what we what's presently out there. And what I see with project labor agreements is it eliminates a good portion of the workforce that's available out there. And in the state of Alaska, where we do experience some high unemployment rates, I think that's kind of detrimental to certain areas where it does eliminate people from working on certain projects. Anytime the way I see it too is anytime there is a tax-funded project and you do enter into a project labor agreement, that's eliminating a lot of people that should be benefiting from that project if they could work on it. I feel as though that's somewhat unconstitutional to have that. And when you get down to safety issues, I think it's prudent to all contractors to have as high a safety factors as they possibly can have on any project. With today's insurance rates, I'm sure I don't have to elaborate on that. For any contract that doesn't adhere to that, I think they're looking at some large losses. And when it comes to unrest on projects, the only time I've ever seen any unrest on a project is if the unions don't get the job. I see the unions picketing the project more so than a non-union project. I believe the unrest really goes direction. And when it comes to the benefits, I do see that a lot of times people do work on a union project if they are non-union people. They don't work long enough to receive their full benefits that they do acquire during the job project. And I think that's kind of on wrong. I think that's not a good situation for the people. I think they should receive all the benefits they do acquire during that project.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of the witness? Thank you, sir. I'd like to go to Anchorage and Mr. Pat Riley, and if the moderator could tell me if there's any more witnesses in the Anchorage teleconference. Mr. Riley, please.
Mr. Riley is the last one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Pat Riley. I'm the owner of Rainproof Roofing in Anchorage at 2201 East 84th Court. Our phone number is 344-5545. We are a local-owned company. It's been in business since 1962. We do work all over the state of Alaska. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and I support the passage of this bill. The present project labor agreements we've run up against have excluded us from these projects, and primarily prior to the Big Depression in the mid-80s, we did mostly light commercial and residential work. Since then, we do public sector, we still do residential work in all phases. So far, the only thing the present project labor agreements have done has excluded us from some projects. Therefore, we do support the passage of this bill as it is presently written. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pat. I hope you're, how's your dad doing?
No.
Doing fine, thank you.
Good. Say hello for me. At this time, Mr. McKinnon, do you need to move along? So if you would like to testify now, we'd be happy to hear from you. We'll go to back to Juneau, then we'll go back to Fairbanks. All the Anchorage testimony is done. Mr. John McKinnon, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John McKinnon. My mailing address is 1114 Glacier Avenue here in Juneau. I'm a 45-year resident of the state. I'm also wearing two hats today. One is as deputy mayor of the city and borough of Juneau. What that gives me is the opportunity to do things when the mayor can't fill in. We have a project labor agreement, and you all have a letter in your file from Mayor Egan. We have a project labor agreement on our elementary school here, and we put it in place for one main reason, and that was one of the positive benefits of a project labor agreement is a mechanism that maximizes local hire. And we have found in the past, locally, that on a sizable public works project, one that is, you know, in the order of a couple of $1 million, it is attractive enough and large enough to bring in outside contractors from out of state. And oftentimes these contractors bring in a significant number of their own workforce. And it's very difficult as a local elected official to pass the red face test for a project that is being paid for out of local tax dollars, and a significant amount of the labor is out of state labor. It becomes difficult for us. So because of that, and because of some criticism along those lines we've had, we put one in place for the Riverbend Elementary School, and it has worked very, very well. Been no complaints and no problems on the project. And I guess what I'm asking on this piece of legislation is if you do go through with it, keep the political subdivisions out of it. I mean, like, you folks are offended when the federal government mandates things at the state level. We can take offense when the federal government or the state government tells us how to do things. This is something that should be a municipal decision, a local decision, whether PLAs are used or not. And we don't plan to use them on every project. In fact, we've used them on one, and only on sizable ones will we use them. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Representative Godfrey.
Yes. I've been a contractor in the state and have worked in, I have never worked in Juneau, but I have worked in Dillingham and Western Alaska, Nome region, and Tok Junction and Fairbanks and just about in Anchorage primarily. But I have found when I, for instance, when we went to Dillingham for a job, they treated us from Anchorage as if we were from California. I mean, that's nature. But we were Alaskans. I've been here since I was 20 and been in the construction business all that time. And we would certainly like to have our local hire issues in local Alaskans, but local, I think, means, as Speaker O'Neill, I believe, used to say something, as all politics are local, and that meant, you know, right in the town that you're dealing with. And so as much as I favor local hire, and I think I served here in the 80s trying to address that issue, it's a very difficult issue to meet the constitutional question of local. And I think everybody supports that. But what local hire could mean in your school project, that a local contractor could, whether union or non-union or from Anchorage or from Fairbanks or from wherever, could participate in that. And I don't see as this hindering anybody, but I don't know, what about the constitutional issues that I brought up about the local hire? How does your agreement that you had with the school solve that kind of an issue, if you could answer that?
Through the chair, Representative Cottery. The way the local project labor agreement works is the hiring done on the job is done through the local union halls. And their hiring rules is set up through a number of tiers, a number of lists they have, A list, B list, C list, based on the number of years that person or other criteria that person has been a member. My understanding, and a little sidebar here, I too am a contractor. I've been in the contracting business ever since I dropped out of being a marine biologist 20-some years ago. I was the one member on the assembly that brought the project labor agreement up and pushed it. And what may seem like a contradiction, I'm also a registered Republican. I saw it as a positive benefit here, and our project labor agreement was tailored a little bit different than just a blanket agreement. We limited it to first-tier subcontractors, because in looking at the way a project is put up, there are a number of tiers of subcontractors, and the further down you get, the smaller you are, and oftentimes the more difficult it is for a small operation to be a union operation. But for the larger subcontractors in mechanical, electrical trades, and some site work, it's you end up with a lot more opportunities and a lot more availability of contractors to bid on the project. I'm not sure whether I've answered your question.
Representative Cutter.
Yeah, you did bring up, political Republicans. Many of us, or several of us at this table, are Republicans, and several of us are in different positions on this issue. But I don't think you're a Republican, that everybody's anti-labor, or have, I hope that was not your...
That wasn't, through the chair, there is a perception out there that there's a tendency to be that way.
It's not my perception, but anyway, maybe it's your perception. Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Bryce.
Trying to meet the requirements 1 through 6, is that a reasonable request of municipalities to go through? Or these 6 hoops, are they reasonable for you guys in terms of just making deciding factor, or making sure that if you want to participate in a PLA, are these six factors that you would point to make the decision for the PLA, or?
They would be 6 things that we would look at.
You only look at 6 things?
No, we look at a wide range of factors. We look at the timing of a project. Mm-hmm. In fact, on our local projects, we time them out to get the most competitive advantage on our mm-hmm. projects. I would hate to put too many more hoops to jump through on projects. We have a number of problems around here that give us hoops to jump through, yeah. Not the least of which are wetlands problems and other permitting problems.
So this would just add another 6 more.
Yes.
Good questions. Mr. McKenna, when you were designing the bidding procedures on the project, and this is helping to educate the committee, did you stipulate that it had to be a union or a non-union contractor to bid on it?
No, we didn't. We stipulated that the hiring on the project will be through the local hiring halls.
So it doesn't. Can a non-union contractor provide his labor force through the hiring halls?
I believe the way the legal, Mr. Chairman, through the way it worked out legally on our PLA, if a contractor became signatory prior to the bid, and this was a little over a year ago, and a lot has happened since then the contractor was able to bring in a certain number of his own forces to do the project, as such as superintendents and in various crafts. But if the agreement took place afterwards, it did limit them. And this was totally dependent on which labor organization you were talking to, whether it was IBEW or laborers or carpenters.
Well, Mr. McKenna, isn't that a de facto method of disallowing a non-union contractor? Correct me if I'm wrong, by signatory, meaning signatory to a collective bargaining agreement?
For a single job only, Mr. Chairman.
For a single job only.
Yes.
And further
Mr. Chairman, as a contractor, you can sign blanket agreements that are, good for, I believe they're a year at a time, or contractors may also opt to sign one job agreements. For one particular job, they will sign up and be signatory.
And I take it that they would be subject to the typical prevailing contractual wages in that particular area if they're going through the union hall.
Mr. Chairman, as part of the Davis-Bacon requirements for public projects, they are anyway in the state.
Okay, that's right. Further questions? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go back to Fairbanks, and we all, the rest of the testimony will be from Fairbanks only, and we'd like to hear from Mr. Jakovich, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. My name is Jason Jakovich. I reside at 4273 Birch Lane in Fairbanks, Alaska. I am currently employed by Osborne Construction and making a living as a carpenter. I support House Bill 209, and I feel that being an employee to be able to work for a non-union contractor is like freedom. And I've worked for unions, and I never received any sort of pension. I wasn't there long enough, of course, but and now I chose to work in a non-union organization. And I received the Davis Bacon pension at this point. I'm working one of those jobs currently. And it really helps out knowing that you have money saving up for you that you can draw on at any point. I believe that PLAs restrict a lot of employees that if there's not jobs in the town at the point and it's a bad year, you may not have work, and to be forced to join a union is wrong. Against your freedom. And I support House Bill 209, and I vote for it. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you for the promotion, Mr. Jagovich. Mr. John Brown, please.
Yeah, thank you. My name is John Brown. I live at 814 Austin here in Fairbanks. I am a 20-year union member. In my opinion, what we're looking at here is Mr. Vesey trying to dictate to state, municipal, and their labor relations policies to the detriment of the state and to the municipalities, and to the benefit of himself, a contractor, and to his political contributors, such as Osborne Construction. Project labor agreements are proven to save money for owners. They do this through insurance of quality work, stable labor relations, timely completion of the work, and they also effectively provide local hire. How about the legal challenges associated with other types of local hire provisions? This is another blatant attack by Mr. Vesey on union workers. I would say to any legislator supporting this bill that unless you carve out your own district, as Mr. Vesey did, I would think twice before I vote. He won election by a very, very narrow margin.
Are there any questions for Mr. Brown? Thank you, Mr. Brown. We'd like to consider the legislation before us and not be too concerned about the political ramifications. Going on to Mr. Floyd Sheely. I'm not sure I have the pronunciation, sir.
Floyd Sheely. I reside at 3481 Hurst Road. I'm federally working for Osborne Construction as a project engineer. I'm here as a taxpayer. I support House Bill 209, and in reading it, the understanding I get is if, in fact, it can be proved that something is beneficial or something is beneficial out of it, then at least it warrants consideration. I think we've heard statements that it's bad. We've heard statements that it's good. I think if we've got an option here to support it, in that the wording at least gives us a consideration for the PLA. Thank you.
Other questions of the witness? Thank you very much, sir. Mr. Howard Wilson, please.
Yes, my name is Howard Wilson. I'm at 600 Auburn Drive here in Fairbanks. I can be reached at 451-0079. I'm a project manager for Osborne Construction. I'm here on behalf of myself, and I know time is late, so I'll keep my comments brief. I would like to say that because of the wide variety of PLAs, both good and bad, and because of the inconsistency in them, I am in favor of House Bill 209. I believe it will bring continuity to the process by establishing fair and consistent guidelines that will benefit the state, its construction workforce, and the rest of the people that live here. Thank you.
Other questions of the witness? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Wilson. Next, Mr. Gary Donofrio, please.
My name is Gary Donofrio. I reside at 1246 Richard Berry Drive, Fairbanks, Alaska. My phone number is 452-6277. I'm a project engineer for Osborne Construction, and I believe that no organization, be it the state or other organizations, should have any control over which qualified contractors get to bid on a public construction project. I am in favor of House Bill 209, except for maybe item 5 on section 36.90.300. And I believe it will help keep the free and open market free and open. Thank you.
Other questions for the witness? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Dodd. Mr. Harold Dillison, please.
Dillison has a lead. Our next testifier is Gary Neese.
Hello, I'm Gary Neese. I reside at 234 Glacier Street here in Fairbanks. And I've been here since 1973. I'm here representing myself, although I do work at a labor union. I'm not going to forget what happens here today or with all these anti-labor bills, and I think that I'm going to be more involved in presenting pro-labor issues from this point forward. I'm raising a handicapped child, and I've spent $1.5 million in medical bills that have been covered by organized labor. Less than 10% of that $1.5 million has been paid for by the federal government or the state. My back is against the wall here, and if I lose much more, I'm going to be bankrupt. I'll be back working for one of these non-union companies that have these insurance plans that that have all these pre-existing clauses, and I'm going to be putting the burden of my burden back on the people of this state. Now, do you want organized labor to pay for some of these major medical bills, or do you want to put it back on the community? I need your help. And I'll be in your front yard with my kid asking for it, and that's just the way it's going to be. My back's against the wall. I've lost as much as I can lose here. Thank you.
Another question for Mr. Neese. Mr. Neese, what is your craft or what union do you belong to, sir?
Yeah, Operating Engineers, Local 302. And, it's been a difficult, this raising a handicapped kid has been very difficult. This community has been very excellent and very supportive, both union and non-union, just everybody across the board. And it's made a difficult situation a lot easier. But this recent attack on all the labor unions, and that's a lot of long-time residents, and I'm sorry, but I feel like it's been time to get more vocal and let the majority of people who've been sitting on, like me, that's been sitting on my hands, not getting my voice heard, to get it out there, and I plan on doing that. So I'm against this 209 and all these other anti-labor bills, and I don't know what else to do. You know, I've only worked 40 days and almost a year now because I'm trying to pay for these medical bills that run up to $20,000 a month. And I'd like to know on these insurance plans for some of these non-union contractors, how many, if they talk about equal rights, what about pre-existing clauses on their insurance? Let's see how many of those are on a level playing field. Let's see how many of those are going to take on a disabled child or somebody in a family that has a pre-existing condition. When they level their playing field, then I can see their point. And this gentleman has spent 33 years in the carpenters working union. Why did he stay there for 33 years before he decided to put in the bad mouth on him? He waited until he got his retirement.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Neese. And the committee wants you to know that you are doing the right thing by coming to testify. And that is important, and everybody should have a voice in what happens in our state and society. And we appreciate your testimony, sir.
Thank you.
Next, Mr. Don Duncan. Excuse me.
Duncan.
Mr. Chairman, Dan Simeon and Dan Duncan had to leave. Our last testifier today is Steve Hovenden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Stephen Hovenden. I live at 360 Terrace Drive, Fairbanks. My phone number is 457-8624. I've lived here 30 years. I've been a union member for a long time. I happen to work for the Teamsters Union as a business agent. I'm a surveyor and truck driver by trade, and I'm here to speak on my behalf as well this evening. I've read House Bill 209, and I will tell you that, let's cut the rhetoric, let's get to the point here. This bill outlaws PLA, there's no doubt about it, that's it. It's a discriminatory set of standards, absolutely. You can say that it doesn't outlaw it. Nobody can meet those specifications, and Mr. Veazey knows it. It is my considered personal opinion that this bill is a political payback to those people that Alan Veazey perceives as his enemy. This is partisan politics, pure and simple, not for the good of the state. This is an anti-union bill. It's union busting, and it's particularly discriminating against workers who have organized. This is broken in House Bill 209. An attempt to destroy it. Project labor agreement is the only way, really, to guarantee local resident hire. There's a testimony from contractor here this evening, testified against PLAs. He did quite well on the PLA out at Eielson Air Force Base. He did that, you know, because he signed a contract with me to do it. The profit margin is still there. These contractors are not excluded from PLAs. The profit margin is still there. The public money that comes into these PLAs is Davis-Bacon wages, and those wages are established by union-negotiated contracts. When PLAs and unions are outlawed, as House Bill 209 is the sure and certain precursor to, there won't be Davis-Bacon jobs. It just won't happen. It won't be there. It's going to go. And I believe that those of you that can listen to this understand that that's very, very true. PLAs have never eliminated any Alaskan worker from any project, certainly not in my union. Discriminate against people because they, whether they are or are not a union member. As far as safety goes, the proven track record that union employers have a significantly lower accident rate than non-union employers. That's all I have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Is there any questions for Mr. Hovington? Seeing none, thank you very much. I believe, is there anybody else on the teleconference line that wishes to testify? Thank you very much. There are a few people in the audience. Is there anybody else? Mr. Flanagan or Ms. Etheridge, did you want to testify today or nobody else signed up? Don, do you want to come forward? Please state your name and affiliation, please.
Don Etheridge, I represent the District Council of Laborers. I wasn't planning on testifying. I just wanted to make the comment, though, as one of the fat cat union guys, I did not put one dime from the PLA project in town in my pocket. We worked with the city for almost 3 months putting that project together, and we worked out agreements with everybody that was involved, that if it did go to a non-union contractor, that we would work with them to put their folks on the jobs, and we had a lot of concessions that we made from the unions that would help this project along and make it work out fine for them.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Arthur? Representative Cotter.
Do you think, as our last member or the last person testified, that this is a discriminatory thing? Do you believe that it discriminates against? Do you think it's discriminatory?
This bill discriminates?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't discriminate. No, I don't feel that. I feel that they ought to be able, the different entities should be able to do what they want to be able to do with it without having to go through all the loops, but I don't see no discrimination in it, no.
Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Mr. Flanagan, did you want?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just Ed Flanagan, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Labor. Just go on the record, the department is concerned, I guess, is opposed to this bill in that it removes an option from political subdivisions and state agencies, though I don't believe there have been any project labor agreements formally entered into by any state agencies. There was, as was mentioned earlier, the decision by the industrial, by ADA on the Healy project to allow one, and then actually one was not successfully negotiated with the agency and the building trade, so there wasn't a project labor agreement per se. The findings required, in effect, and I got to claim I'm not an attorney, but spent a lot of time looking at this issue, and the requirement for a finding of resident hire in the PLA is almost a poison pill. It has come out in the testimony on the Fairbanks and on the Juneau PLAs that while resident hire is a goal and a it best be described as a welcome side effect, because that can undermine the validity of the project labor agreement in court. They have been upheld, as was said, in Boston Harbor. Ms. Willard's comments notwithstanding, Boston Harbor, the Massachusetts Water Resources Authority versus the ABC, the Associated Building Contractors, did go all the way to the Supreme Court, and the issue was whether project labor agreements in the public sector were legal. It found that they were. Republican governors such as Pataki, of not to get partisan, but Governor Pataki, Governor Whitman have utilized or promoted project labor agreements on certain projects in their state where appropriate. It can accomplish, as seems to be the case in Fairbanks and Juneau, some valid public policy purposes. And while they differ from one to the next, there have been, I'm aware of, accommodations that were made, and many non-union workers have gone to work through the project labor agreement on the Fairbanks project, and I believe the Juneau project as well. So basically, it certainly isn't appropriate for every project, but it's maybe one more tool in the arsenal of the political subdivisions and possibly at some point of the state agencies that would effectively, we feel, be precluded by this bill. And also just want to correct one other thing. The Superior Court, Judge Beislein, in the case of the Fairbanks Project Labor Agreement, in case Ms. Willard gave the impression, did uphold that the PLA was legal. He did have he did find some things problematic, such as the use of the hiring hall, the exclusive use of the hiring hall, and the borough adjusted the terms of the PLA to accommodate Judge Beislein's concerns, and I believe it is Ms. Willard, actually, who is appealing, and her plaintiffs is appealing to the Supreme Court, as the project is underway under the project labor agreement with, so far, from what we hear, good results.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Flanagan, in your experience with PLA agreements in the state in the last few years, whether dictated or whether it just happens that way, do you feel that there is more local hire under a PLA agreement than there is when you don't have a PLA agreement?
Yes, sir, I believe there is. And there is a very limited universe of PLAs in the public sector that have been utilized. I'm very familiar with, I was the resident hire enforcement for the Alaska Power Authority on the Bradley Lake project, which had an after-the-fact project labor agreement. The low bidder was a signatory contractor. There was a project labor agreement so that all subcontractors came under it, and we had over 90% Alaska hire on a project that was massive and had a lot of specialized skill work. And the local hire law had an effect there too, I got to say. But I was associated with probably what was the first public sector PLA, although we didn't even call it that at the time, with the Nome School District in 1990. At the time, I was working for the Laborers Training School, and the school board president in Nome and the laborers representative up there called up and said, "We've got a asbestos contract coming up here, and if the union comes up and trains people, we'll make sure whoever gets the job signs the union agreement and uses the local people to go to work." I said, "Well, I don't know if you can." This was before Boston Harbor. I said, "Geez, I don't know if you can do that, guys." You know, and they said, "Don't worry about it. This is Nome. We'll take care of it. You get up here." And we went up. We trained probably 3 union members and 12 or 13 people that weren't, had never been in the union. A non-union contractor got the job and signed a one-job agreement, brought in 3 or 4 of his own people, and used local people exclusively for 3 seasons on that project. And it led to other work, other contractors that went up there. The local community was able to say, "We've got local people here." And a lot of those people have since gone on to work in hazardous waste and worked on the environmental cleanups for IT, and are by now, well, they're not vested yet, although I believe the union is unions are changing their vesting requirements to 5 years. So those people out there in Nome are on their way or are vested members of the various unions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative McGovern.
Yeah. You know, I have also, like I said earlier, worked around the state, and I've always found, I've worked both union and non-union, and I've found that it was to my benefit and to hire all the local qualified people wherever I was at. I didn't have to have the camp expenses and things like that. They had the local, and I think everybody that does that certainly wants, it's not a local hire issue. I mean, if we can get the qualified people, but when you're in Emonic and your specifications, you've got to be within, you know, a half inch on a runway, and you don't have anybody local that's qualified to run that, you've got to come and get somebody, maybe from Anchorage or from wherever, to do the blade work or whatever is required. But I certainly, all my rural jobs or out of Anchorage jobs, I would say hired 75% or maybe even higher than 75%, 80%, because I didn't want to take and transport people from Anchorage if I could get the job done with the locals. So, whether it was union or non-union. So.
It certainly does seem counterintuitive to not hire locals, but it unfortunately, even out in the rural areas, that does seem to be what happens, and that's why one of the reasons given for so many force account projects, where the local entity, the city or village, takes on the project itself, and so that it isn't contracted. So it kind of defies logic, but it does seem to be still a problem throughout the state, and some of it is, if it's not an overt prejudice, it just is an assumption that when you get away, and some of it is natural, you know, the contractor knows their own people, but in the situation you're talking about, you'd still hire as many locals, but some folks go out and they think, well, I'm getting away from, they think if they're coming up to Anchorage or Juneau, there's not people up here, you know, it's not just a rural thing, they've got to have, you know, I've seen contractors that came up and every piece of equipment had to have an artiste from Oregon on it, you know, and as if we couldn't run equipment up here, and that still happens. And they work here a while, and then they realize that they're wrong, and they might hire local. But whatever, whether it's our local hire law that we're still hanging on some of the strictly state-funded projects, or if it's a project labor agreement, or if it's a tribal employment rights ordinance, if you can get their attention and show them you have to do this on this first project, we're not going to wait 3 years for you to learn, oh, these folks up here can really do the work, then we're that much further ahead. So,
and my comment a little, you know, when we did do work, some of the work that we did was for the communities themselves, you know, we were bid. We agreed, for instance, that many of the labor force there, unskilled, so to speak, that was out in the fish camps doing the fish. You know, we agreed, and it was to our benefits to use them when they come off in the fall of the year, when they come away from the fish camp, to do our things that was heavily labor intensive. And I think at one time we had 40 locals out of one village. We had everybody that wanted to work. And it was beneficial. And so I think contractors try to I'm not doubting the local hire issue in this, but I think whether with or without that, people want to hire a local. It's been my experience.
Well, it's a complex problem, Representative Cowdery, and our argument is that this is just one tool possibly that might be removed from the
thank you.
Arsenal.
Oh, Joe? Excuse me. No, hold on just a moment. But just to make an announcement here, the meeting for Monday was misscheduled, so the meeting on Monday is at 3:15. Yeah, I just wanted to point that out. I forgot to make the announcement earlier. Very good. Schlein, I've got some other questions. Maybe I can contact you. I think this is an extraordinarily interesting and controversial matter of legislation. I have some questions about what is in the bill right now, and I think this legislation deserves additional review by this committee, and as a result, I'm going to hold this bill over, and I do have some questions. If I have an opportunity, I'll give you a call. I appreciate your attending. You
certainly
weren't signed
Mr.
up,
Chairman.
So I wasn't sure you wanted to tell
us. No, I appreciate the opportunity. I was really just here to listen, but I felt I might contribute something at the end here. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Planning. We are going to hold this over, and just one thing we will be taking up on Monday, the 218 bill. Just, I understand, for everybody's information, there was an amendment done in the Senate on 218, and there was also, yeah, and then there's a request for another amendment from the insurance industry. But we do want to get into that KK bill, because I want to make sure the committee does spend some time with that portion of it. We've been through the other portion of it, but I know we've got some other stuff here on the calendar that, you know, we keep getting put off. That's why we kind of calendared, and we're kind of waiting over there. But I think we wanted to take bite that off in hunks, you know, so we understood that. Gene, you have
a... Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering if you want to really want to work on this bill, if you might want to, you might want to put it into a subcommittee so it can get the work done on it off to the side without having to do it in the full committee so you can address the other bills that we...
Well, I appreciate your suggestion there. The chair will take your suggestion under advisement, and we'll see what we do. We do have a number of things on our agenda that's more extraordinarily important, particularly the 80-page Castlemont Kennedy bill that may have to take precedence, for example. But we will be looking into this matter. With that, I wish you all a happy weekend. This meeting is